Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This week on The Science Revolution is Dr. Justin Frank, author of the Trump, Obama, and Bush on the Couch series of books. He's here on how to deal with the trauma of the pandemic and the trauma of 4 years of Trump. It's been a stressful time. Some of us have lost family and friends and have found it difficult to stay safe and pay the bills. The Trump years have been a challenge to democracy and our sanity. Dr. Justin Frank is here to help. Stay tuned. Dr. Justin Frank with us, the author of Trump on the Couch, among other things, professor of psychiatry at George Washington University, politically aware psychoanalyst and psychiatrist. His Twitter handle is Justin Frank MD, spelled just like it sounds. The last time we talked, I had a caller who was concerned about his son possibly being suicidal. I asked Dr. Frank if he would come on, and he and I talked about it. My sense of it, based on that segment, was that there are many of you out there who may have questions about how do I deal with the trauma of having lost a job, you know, psychologically, or how do I put my relationship back together after having lived together for this last year in close quarters the way we have and the conflicts that have arisen? How do I help my kids make the transition back into school? I mean, there's just a million questions that come out of this year that we've been locked down. And then the larger questions, and I think Dr. Frank is also eminently qualified to answer these, is like, how do I explain fascism to my kids? How do I explain the Trump phenomenon to my kids? How do I explain racism to my kids? There's all that stuff. Dr. Frank, welcome back to the program. It's so nice to have you with us. I'm curious your thoughts on my thoughts on what we should be talking about today, and then we'll get some calls on the board here for you.
People are feeling traumatized. What I'm thinking about is that what you said makes a lot of sense. And I just think the questions are going to be far afield because everybody has different concerns. You raised almost everything. What is fascism? What is racism? What was the nature of the trauma of COVID? How do we deal with suicidal family members? What kinds of things are kids going through? What about Trump? How come he's so popular? All those things. I'm open to all of that. I think we can do some of that today, and I'll just have to come back every day for a few months.
So let's start with Ray in Tacoma, Washington. Ray, you are on the air with Dr. Justin Frank.
Well, here's the deal is I had a brother like about 4 years ago, got drunk, shot himself in the head, killed himself. My mom couldn't hang, and about 3 years later, she killed herself with a gun as well. And it seems like, in my experience, people who are suicidal are trying to draw attention to themselves. And I hate to be brutal about it, but if we were to kind of paint suicide as a selfish act, would that sort of apply more of a stigma to it?
Thank you, Ray.
Well, that's what a terrible situation in your family. I'm so sorry. To me, there's lots of ways to paint suicide, but one way of painting it is that it's murder of the self. It is a form of murder. It's self-murder. And it also damages, obviously, the family in terrible ways. But the purpose of it or the means behind it or the reasons for it vary with different people. And what I hear, at least certainly from your mother, is that she did it not to call attention necessarily to herself, but because she couldn't bear the pain of losing her son. She couldn't, as you say, hang with it. And that's because the pain was so overwhelming that she felt she couldn't endure it anymore and she couldn't get rid of it. And so the suicide is about trying to get relief from pain or ending pain in that case. Why your brother did it, he was certainly under the influence of alcohol, but I don't know what else happened. One of the things about alcohol is that it's disinhibiting. It allows you to express impulses that you might not otherwise do because your judgment is clouded and the brakes on your mind, what we call the superego or conscience, is also impaired with alcohol. And so one might commit suicide or do something also destructive. But I don't think it's to call attention to oneself, other than it may be at some deep level for some people trying to kill yourself as a way of sending a message to somebody else who you feel doesn't really care about you. I'll show you what not caring means. I'm going to take it to the ultimate degree. So there's different motivations. I don't know what else to say about it right now, Ray.
You're saying that suicide can even be a form of aggression. One of the things you mentioned, if I could just add a follow-on question, if somebody is feeling that pain and despair and would prefer not to use suicide as a way of avoiding it, how do they avoid that pain and despair of, for example, losing a child?
Well, they have to talk to somebody about their pain. One of the things that even as far as Roman times, Cicero wrote about friendship as a way of managing loss, and that you cannot manage loss. Of course, this is all in Latin, so I can't translate it that well. You can't manage loss without friendship. And that's a similar thing to now. There are suicide hotlines you can call, but when you're feeling despair, you need to share it with somebody and put the feelings into words. Otherwise, they get converted into action, and that's when a person tries to kill themselves. But if they're feeling despair and hopeless, writing about it is not enough. They have to actually speak with a person and be with a person and even touch a person who's in their family and in their life. But there are also suicide hotlines where at least you can start out by talking to someone. And I think every city has them, and you could even call 911 on yourself and they'll put somebody on to talk with you. But it requires not being isolated. You're right about suicide. And it is about murder. It's murder of the self. It really is. It's wanting to kill the part of you that is in terrible pain. There may be other things that drive a person to suicide who's more psychotic, let's say, which is like a wish to be united with a dead family member or the wish to fulfill something that's really crazy. And talking to somebody might not help in that case. But the importance is to have somebody to talk to. The irony is that COVID makes touching others harder than ever.
Lupe in Pueblo, Colorado. You are on the air with Dr. Frank.
This is really hard for me to articulate. I lost 5 family members to COVID. One of them
was
my father. And one of them was my grandfather. Lost all my father figures, but I wanted to call in because it was such a bizarre way to lose them. I never thought it would be possible to lose them that way. And not only that, my family was deprived of our grieving process. We couldn't be together. And the other element that rubs salt to the wound is that there are people who tell me, and not only personally, but also on a large scale, like politicians telling me that that is not the way that they died, that it wasn't the COVID. So they are telling me, no, it wasn't the COVID, even though it was. It's not like my family just spontaneously dropped dead. It took them. So I was wondering, what is the best way to deal with that type of grief, where other people are trying to convince you that it wasn't that that took them, and it's just the anger that that brings me? And do you know of any support groups or research that is being done? Because the COVID has really left behind tons, and I don't even know how many grieving people this pandemic has caused. I'm worried for the collective psychology, the mental health of our country.
Thank you, Luke.
Well, first of all, my heart goes out to you and your losses. And I think that it's courageous to even talk about it and share this with us and with me. So That's my first thought. I could dismiss quickly the politicians, if that's okay, who say they didn't die of COVID, your family, or that COVID is not real. The best way is not to argue with them, but to say, that's your opinion and you're entitled to it. But that's not how I see it, and that's not how I know what happened. And there's no point in arguing about an opinion that you have. It's not a fact. And some way of making it clear that that's what they think rather than getting into a rage-filled argument. And that is one way of dealing with it. And when you hear politicians on TV saying that, all I can do is turn off the channel or watch another program or listen to music or something. There's no point. It's their point of view, which is an opinion, because obviously you know the facts and you know the truth. So that's the first thing. The second, the biggest thing is that you've had these horrible losses, and the grieving process of not being able to say goodbye or to be with the person or to hold the person or to tell them that you love them or tell them that whatever you need to tell them, that you love them and you're angry, or to tell them that they don't need to worry and they should go peacefully so they don't have to hang on if they're suffering. There's lots of different things that you're deprived of in the mourning process, and those are all very serious deprivations. There are suicide groups, there are hotlines for it, but there are also groups for loss and grieving groups in every city, including in Pueblo, I'm sure.
Thank you. Jordan, in Roanoke, Virginia, you are on the air with Dr. Frank.
Thank you. I have an adult married daughter with a history of depression who is feeling so isolated during her pregnancy because of the pandemic. She is going to be meeting with telehealth for mental health and is, you know, under the care of her obstetrician. What can I do to support her and not exacerbate her anger that I am supporting her? Thank you for your answer.
Well, thank you for your call. First of all, I was thinking about the term pandemic, and maybe we should call it contagion. We are faced with a contagion, and that way we can learn about the source of the word contagion, which means with or together, con, and tagion means touch. So it's about touching with, and that is completely a big problem with COVID and the isolation from it. It's a contagion that doesn't allow touch unless you're inside the same bubble. So I don't know if you and your daughter are inside the same bubble, but it's important to both talk to her and listen to her about her anger. You can't make her stop being angry, but you can listen to it and say that you understand it, and it's really terrible feeling alone. And I'm here with you, and I know how terrible it feels. In other words, listening can become, for her and you, a new form of talking and a new form of touching verbally without, hopefully, even on the phone rather than through video. I don't know how people are doing these things in Roanoke or anywhere. COVID contagion has turned us all into islands. John Donne's poem from many, many centuries ago, he said, no man is an island. Well, that's not true anymore, or not as true as it was, because there is a real problem about feeling isolated. So if you can talk to her about it and listen to her about it and letting her know that, and her anger at you, if she's angry at you for helping her, you can say, listen, I'm only helping you because right now, A, I'm your mother, and B, I'm helping you because you need somebody who's not you to help you. It doesn't mean that you have to depend on me or I'm telling you you're weak because you need me or any of those things. But the anger is about the frustration about being shut off and cut off that this epidemic has done. It's really caused a terrible trauma to so many people, not only who've lost people, but who are alone in this situation. So if your daughter's about to deliver, I don't know if there's a father in the picture who can help her, or if there is a sibling who would come and actually quarantine themselves and then find a way to go visit her. There are things that can be done, but it's very hard. And I think the COVID is both a social disease and a physical disease. We're talking about the social problems.
Christine in Livonia, Michigan, you're on the air with Dr. Frank.
Hi, Dr. Frank. Like the previous caller, I lost my mom last year, and I lost my father in 91. I was 14, and I feel very, very alone. You know, you like you said, your bubble. You have your own problems as it is. And then I feel like I have no one to talk to. I really don't have that many friends, and I can't really contact anybody, and I feel like I'm in this deep hole, and I'm trying to, I have a family, I do have a son, and my husband has family, but they're not very welcoming to me, and I just want to ask you more about how to deal with this.
Can you be in the same room with some of those people, even if they're not welcoming? Is there some way? Have you be in each other's bubble or having a shared kind of bubble? That would be the first thing. And then the second thing is that it's really terrible to be in a deep hole, and you need to have somebody who can listen to you and talk to you. I don't know if that's a sibling or a friend or anyone, or call someone. It's really an isolating situation with COVID, and people are feeling terribly alone, which is why I'm glad you called in just even to talk for a few minutes. If you need to have someone hold you, touch you, talk to you, listen to you, and I hope that that can happen, and you may have to be the one to make it happen by letting people know that you're in pain and sharing it.
Yeah, we wish you the very best. Sunny in Marin County, California, you are on the air with Dr. Frank.
I would like to put Trump on the couch, if you could, for me, and explain what could be driving this man who did nothing while over 500,000 of us have perished. It just traumatizes, and I get infuriated that I don't understand how we sat here just feeling like, hurry, hurry, help. As this man did nothing, I'm wondering if you could diagnose for us what is going on in this crazy head of Trump's.
I spent a lot of time trying to get inside of his crazy head. In fact, the book that I wrote, Trump on the Couch, took about 2 years to write. And what I discovered is that there is a fundamental conflict from early on between building things or making things or being like a builder like his father and being a destroyer. He would like to break things. He would like to break buildings. He would like to break things that other people have. He would like to attack his father. And the part of him that wants to break things is dominant. And he breaks, as somebody wrote in one of their titles of a book, whatever Trump touches dies. And I think that that's accurate because he wants to break things. He's a destroyer more than a creator. And he's been a destroyer for years. But he gets away with it because he can sometimes charm people or make people think he's doing things. But basically, he's a very destructive person. And there's two ways that he has tried to destroy people for the past 4 years. The first one is by complete neglect. He would rather golf. He never did anything productive to help people. He turned his back on us during the COVID crisis, and he has always turned his back on everybody except the very rich, for whom he got tax cuts that really made them and him a lot of money. But the second part has to do with a kind of envious hatred of other people. He can't stand that somebody else could do something he can't do, which is why he is always saying, I'm the smartest person here. I'm the most honest person here. I'm the best at this. I know more than the generals. He says those things all the time. I have the best vocabulary of anybody. Those are all defensive statements that are compensatory grandiosity statements, because he knows that he isn't, and he can't bear the fact that somebody has better than he is. And that's from early on a feeling of envy. And that when people have a malignant, which I call it, envy, they attack the good. They destroy what's good. And what's good about America has been our Constitution, actually. And he's trying to destroy that, and he got pretty close to it. He's trying to destroy the electoral process. Why he taps into so many supporters is a very important question also. But he taps into them because there are many people who have destructive wishes and impulses, but who have never really expressed them. So if you go to a sports event, a whole group of fans can yell, kill the umpire, or do these things, but they can yell them, but they're in the fans. They're in the stands. They're not on the field. They don't have to carry the ball or tackle somebody or hit a home run, whatever people are doing. They don't have to do it. But Trump has given people permission to express their destructive feelings. And a lot of people are resentful. They're resentful about the government. They're resentful about the economy. Tom was talking earlier about this huge gap between the wages people get and the wages that they should be getting for what they produce. I mean, a huge gap. And I think that people are angry and frustrated about it and have sort of learned to live with it. Either they drink or they get angry or whatever it is in their families or go to church. But Trump said, forget all that. This is a swamp. These are evil people, and we're going to get rid of them. So he got into power as a destroyer. The problem is people didn't understand that he was a destroyer and not a builder at all. I wish I could say more about that, but that's plenty. I mean, he's got a deep strain of cruelty.
Cheryl, in Dallas, Texas, you are on the air with Dr. Frank.
I am devastated. I lost my job last year. And then I think the thing that got me the most is my mother was in another state. She was in Ohio, and she passed away in December. I had 4 days before, from the time they told me that she had COVID until she passed away. It took 30 days before she could be cremated. And I couldn't go there. It's missed the COVID. And I just feel, I'm devastated. There was nothing like that. Waiting for her to pass away, I said goodbye to her on a Zoom call. And then when they had her, when the memorial was done, it was on a Zoom call. I can't even deal with this. I took care of her for 12 years before she went to the nursing home. And I protected her all that time. And then the time came when she really, really needed me, and I wasn't there. And I'm African American. Culturally, I was supposed to be there, and I wasn't. And I can't deal with it.
It's horrible. It's horrible. I don't know what to say, because I think that when you can't even reach your mother and be there, you're supposed to be there as a daughter in addition to being an African-American daughter. And it's horrible. And what this COVID experience has done is people don't get the fact that it's also attacked our social fabric. It's not just an illness, which is enough in and of itself causing death. It's an illness that has broken down the capacity to touch, how we've lost touch with each other. The only way to get in touch with your mother is by having much of her inside you as you can and remembering the loving feelings you had towards her and she towards you, and talk to any friends or family that you might have where you can hug them if they're in the same bubble or something, because touching and closeness is what has been depriving all of us in one form or another. And I think that there's no way to bring her back. And the feeling of loss is so massive that some form of touching, holding, talking, sharing it like you're even calling in today, although this is far from being personal. It's really not as far as not talking to anybody or not touching. And I think it's really essential. And we can't be together at funerals. Now, President Biden has tried to help a little bit, and he at least understands about the importance of facing loss and about mourning, and tries to bring the country together. But theoretically, from my perspective, he would be having to do mourning every day, because every day people are dying and people are separated from their loved ones and can't say goodbye to them. My heart goes out to you, but you need to find some people, either siblings or friends or somebody, to just cry with. Because once you do more crying, I think it'll be easier to remember all the good things from her.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm so sorry. This illness or this pandemic has torn apart, has affected every form of our social life, which is at funerals, weddings, births. We've had callers about all of those things. And that doesn't even count the idea of built-in distancing, 6 feet away, masks, no touching. And then there's all of our social situations where people are losing their job and people are frightened. And there are divisions in our society that are made worse by this pandemic.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Erwin in Missoula, Montana. Erwin, you're on the air with Dr. Frank.
I'm from a large family, diverse in political views. And prior to the COVID, we weren't really speaking over politics. Some of my family are actually Republican office holders at one time. What I'm getting to is my brother-in-law died, and my sister is just kind of clammed up. She won't talk to anybody about it. She was a Republican office holder, and I'm not sure if we should try to reach out to her or what. That's just my general question. There will be a service next summer for him.
I think that reaching out is the most important thing you can do, and you can do it gently, but do it more than once, every few days even, with a phone call or a note to say that, you know, your brother-in-law is on your mind. That he's on your mind and that you're very happy to talk about whatever she wants to talk about. And that you can understand wanting to clam up. I mean, it's like, I get it, because we've all been shut down in one form or another over this whole year. Shut down politically, because if there's a differences of opinion in a family, people don't talk to each other in the same way or at all. Or now with this social distancing that's enforced, even with people you know, you have to sit far away and can't hug them. Everyday forms of life are disrupted. So I would try to call her and try to reach out, and then hopefully you can listen. But if there's a way to empathize or identify with her hurt, that you understand about clams and you understand about shells, but a shell is not the same thing as a bubble, and we can work and talk within a bubble, but I can't get into her shell. Some way of just talking about that and about also what you miss about the person who died. I don't know what else to say, but I agree with you. I think it's important to take some action and not just wait for the clamshell to open up. You don't have to push it, but you can certainly reach out in a way that involves letting her know you're receptive.
Is it a good idea to say, I know you disagree with me politically, but let's set that aside and just be here for each other?
That's another thing to say. Absolutely. When we have a love and other feelings that transcend political differences and that are more important in many ways, and we can put political differences aside right now.
Yeah, seems like a very, very good idea. Mike in Studio City, California.
The follow-up to the question about Trump's mental whatever it is, when I see these people cheering him on, these fans or fanatics, and it reminds me of the exact same pictures that we see from the 30s with Hitler. What is going on in their minds? I just don't get it.
Well, one of the things that's going on is that when you're very young, and that applies to all of us, we divide up the world into good and bad in our minds, into either or. And it's how we learn to manage things like night terrors, fears. Is that a good person? Is that a bad person? And we have a monolithic approach to this. And this is normal. It's a way of organizing. It's called splitting, where the mind is split. But as one matures, one realizes that their mother is not all good or all bad, or their father is not all good or all bad. And so now they have a problem where they love the person, but they also are angry at the person. So they have to come to terms with a new kind of anxiety and worry that they can damage the very person that they also love. And that's a different kind of anxiety about being hurtful or destructive. But people who are stuck in a splitting position have only the outside who are bad and the inside that is good, and that's it. So there's no possibility of having ambivalence or mixed feelings. So Trump has tapped in to a large swath of our population that is prone to splitting. The government is bad. It was started with Reagan. The government is the enemy. If anybody says, I'm here to help you, I'm here to help you, Reagan said, that's the worst thing you could ever hear. Biden is not trying to correct that. It was like pushing some incredible thing uphill. But why the followers follow Trump is that the bad is outside themselves. Bad is in the Congress. Bad is in the swamp. And he has tapped into the nature of splitting and dissociation, where you can dissociate two parts of yourself. I love my family. I hate outsiders. If I'm white and have a black neighbor, I might be okay because that's a black neighbor I know. But if it's somebody I don't know and I'm white, all bets are off. If somebody's a Democrat or a Republican, whoever it is who's not me, I hate whoever is not me. And I blame them for being destructive and hurtful. That's a way of avoiding responsibility. The person who discovers that they love and hate their mother, that they love and hate the same person, starts to take responsibility for his own hurtful feelings and worries about them, but also has loving feelings and has a complex inner world. The people who follow Trump have gotten rid of that complexity. It's gone. And it's very frightening to see that so many people just see things in terms of either or. We saw some of it when Obama was president, because I felt in writing my book about him, he was what's called a both and person. He could see both sides of things, but he was the president of a country that was largely either or, based on racism, white, non-white, based on feelings about women, feelings about the immigrants. I mean, millions of different things that are split into either or. And people don't talk to each other now, and they don't listen because they would have to see the other person as a person or as human or as having qualities like the self. And it's normal for children to do that because they have to organize themselves. I've written some papers about that, which I call the green speck theory of life, which is that a child who is having, say, a mac and cheese or some kind of pasta with a cream sauce, if there's a little speck of parsley in there, he won't eat it. It's spoiled by something that's contaminating it. And that's what Trump has conveyed to people, that complexity is a contamination. It's an amazing...
Is this emotional immaturity?
It's emotional immaturity. And it's a need to protect oneself to manage anxiety.
Thank you so much for dropping by. It's great talking with you. Dr. Justin Frank, you can tweet him at JustinFrankMD, his most recent book, Trump on the Couch. That's all for this week's Science Revolution. You can find the video portions of the Science Revolution on YouTube and check out our Facebook page.